Hey Lee, welcome to the Vantage Point podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. First of all, how are you?
I'm good, my man. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Before we get into a good chat about the world of combat sports, boxing, MMA, I want to know a bit about you first. So tell me about the inception of the Bad Blood podcast. What got you started? Where does your love for combat sports stem from?
It was through a lot of personal matters how I got into boxing. I wanted to do it because it was an exertion for my anger. I didn't cope with a lot of things that happened in my personal life when I was younger. I carried a lot of grief for a long time. I was training to be in the army. I got kicked out. I'm not proud of that, but they say one door closes, another opens. I was introduced to then the British and Commonwealth champion, Scott Dann, and I had the pleasure of training in his gym a few times. I got hooked straight away there and then. I just went to the local boxing gym, me and my friend, and we just got on with it. I was working for a magazine called Peep Magazine. They were like a cultural magazine, but they gave me a column for combat sports and the boxing. I was interviewing an author called Jamie Boyle. I was meant to be doing an article. The owner of the magazine was he wasn't playing ball, let's say. So I put forth to Jamie, look, yeah, that's only one outlet, but what if we do like a verbal podcast? Then we can have many platforms. So it stemmed from that. Had a good interview with him, and the network and the market just came straight along after that. And everything sort of fell in place. It was quite weird because Brian Cockrell, the tax man, that was our second interview. And then we went on to an even bigger interview on the third one with Steve Wraith. We just hit it off from there, really.
Yeah, it sounds like you got off to a flying start.
I remember when we weren't even getting 500 views and stuff like that. It was
Tell
pretty.
me about it.
Mate, look, yeah, it will grow. Consistency and persistency is the key in this game.
It's interesting. I think when you've got discipline in your life, you can add a bit of structure to it that people who are just creative can't do. But you know, you with your training, I do training as well, different type of training. But I think that kind of mentality, if you apply that and you've got a little bit of a spark of creativity, the two work together pretty well, don't they?
It's a match made in heaven, mate. All I can say is when you have those two, you've got a winning formula. And like you say, when you've got the strength of mind through your training, you can apply that to everything you do because if you've got structure and routine and everything that you do, it becomes easier mentally.
What's been like a particular guest episode for you that's maybe moved you in some way, or a story you've heard from someone on your platform that you've sort of helped uncover?
The biggest thing that I've ever done is made awareness who a sexual predator, a man who is a danger to women and kids. That's how my channel grew as well, because this man is well known and helping to unfoil his antics and his patterns. I feel quite proud for myself, but I had to step away from that and continue with combat sports because it started to cross over into real life. And once it starts crossing over into real life, you've got to knock it on the head. You really have to. When you're in the criminology sector, it becomes very murky and dirty. A lot of people, they will do everything behind their back to try and sabotage what you are doing. It doesn't just become involved on the YouTube, it becomes involved in real life. Criminology is a really touchy subject. Combat sports in criminology really goes hand in hand. It's a very, very murky
Tough.
situation in the criminology. That's why I stopped it. But the combat sports is my main niche.
I got first introduced to the world of combat sports when I found some old clips of Mike Tyson, his training, some of his early fights when he was like 21, 22, when he was just going through people. What were some athletes that you looked up to when you were younger that got you so interested into combat sports?
Prince Nassim, I loved him. I thought he was very flamboyant, very flash. A person who reminds me of his style is Ben Whittaker, but it was Prince Nassim. It was around that time. Joe Calzaghe, Ricky Hatton, they are gods in my eyes, but it was those type of people who got me into it. You've seen Mike Tyson at his most ferocious. I don't believe there's ever been a heavyweight. I don't believe there will be a heavyweight who has come onto the scene like Mike Tyson because him and Custer Marta was a very, very good match made in heaven. It was a shame Don King become involved with Mike Tyson. He led him down the dark side. He took him away from Kevin Rooney, which have everything in place for Mike Tyson when Custer Marta died. This is the thing with boxing. Like I say, it's murky. It goes hand in hand with the underworld, unfortunately.
Tyson came from there, didn't he? He was done for robbing people and all sorts of stuff. He found boxing. I think the discipline of it, at least for a while, when he was in his probably most uncontrollable stage, he found Custer Marta, who showed him this is what you can do with your skills. Do you think that people overlook, you know, like the general public, people think of fighting as like thuggish, like brutal, you know, but people don't look at the art form that it is, you know? Mike Tyson is so skilled, and yet people will pass him off as just like a thug. And it's like, no, he's one of the most skilled athletes in history. The amount of discipline he must have gone through to transform his mindset at that time to control it and execute in the ring must have been tough, right?
Boxers are presumed that they're really thick, dumb, stupid. But in reality, you've got to make a lot of decisions in a split second, quicker than a split second, blink of an eye. And there's many, many factors that you've got to think of. The punches coming at you, where you're going to be to evade the punches, where you're going to be in range to attack, how you can get outside of that. Can you lay a trap whilst you're moving off, or can you lay a trap whilst you're getting inside? This is the beauty of it. It's a very, very skilled sport. Boxing is just perceived as men of just throwing punches. I can do that. No, mate. The real matter of the fact is a real science to it, a real art. And it does get overlooked. You're very correct on that. Because there's a lot of patterns involved in boxing, phases of attacks, phases of defense. So I think the overall perception of a boxer is, yeah, they're stupid, but in reality, they're not.
Lomachenko is a ballet dancer. Usyk plays chess to train for boxing fights. These are smart people and they're tactically thinking, right, how am I going to pace myself over a course of a fight so I don't gas myself, so I can hit the other guy, so I can put him off, maybe intimidate him when I haven't got the most power, but let him know I'm still there. There's a lot of strategy goes into it. It's like a war, it's like a battle with an army. You know, you've got to plan how you're going to do it. You can't just go in guns blazing unless you're like a Mike Tyson and you can take people's heads straight off.
Again, with Mike Tyson, the element of fear. Boxing is 90% mental. When you've got the right people and team around you, it becomes so much easier. If you know you've got everything sorted on the outside, you'll do well on the inside.
I think Anthony Joshua is a good example of this. His head seems like it's all over the place at different times. You wonder how he's going to be each fight he has. He's got the power, he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got everything you should need to be the best heavyweight. But then he'll turn up to a fight, and sometimes he just doesn't seem to either have faith in his game plan or have faith in his corner or even have faith in the power of his punches, where it's like he's unwilling to step in and throw with full force like he did when he was younger and probably more reckless as he would see it. He would say he's becoming more defensively responsible, but it's like his head is the only thing in his own way.
You can see in the corner, he's asking, how do I look? What do I do? It should be firing in that moment, but Joshua has not been in that moment those last few fights. I believe with Ben Davison, this could be a little successful period for Joshua. Look at what Ben Davison did with Tyson Fury. He gave that man so much confidence, he got him back onto his boxing ability. This is what Joshua lacks. Because that Wallen fight, Joshua did look okay. He looked all right. It looked a different performance than his previous fights. I believe a couple of more fights, and we'll see the best of Joshua. Perfect match, in my opinion.
You're right with what you said about Tyson Fury getting him in the right headspace, because he's another one who's all over the place. He comes across like with a lot of bravado, but he goes through massive highs and lows. Seeing him take years out of boxing, get absolutely obese and come back, and then next minute he's happy-go-lucky again. He needs someone with a strong mental connection to him to steer him in the right direction. I think, you know, you're right, every boxer needs that. How do you think the old generation of boxers like the Evander Holyfields, Riddick Bowes, that kind of era of boxers would fare against like the Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilders of our generation?
You can't beat that era for me. Lennox Lewis is one of my favorite boxers of all time. I love watching him when he was with Emmanuel Stewart. Again, perfect match. If you put those boxers in today, the top 10 now against the top 10 back then, black and white, mate. You're talking about a very high standard of boxing. Yeah, you might have more scientific ways today, but Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, Haseem Rahman, all them from back then, I just think they would fare really good today.
What do you make then of the financial influence that Saudi Arabia has on, particularly the heavyweight division of boxing at the moment? I've heard the UFC is going to run its first event out there kind of soon. What do you make of that?
When Lyndon Arthur is getting nearly 2 million to fight Bivol, you know it's a different type of financial situation over there. You can see by the marketing, you can see by the promos, it is a different caliber. Boxing has never seen anything like this. It's going to make it harder for the small hall shows if they start investing in the lower divisions as well. Nobody's going to be able to get in that circle. Dan Davis, he was wanting to host his next fight in Saudi. There's talk about it being in England. But how can you match that type of money? You can't match that type of money. And when you bring in other factors, weather, because Tan's used to nice hot weather, he ain't going to come to England again. He's going to go to Saudi.
I don't know if Tank's going to leave USA, is he? Like ever.
He has done before. Let's not forget it. I believe he fought one of the Welsh brothers. I believe he come across and fought one of those. He definitely fought one of the Welsh brothers in England. But that was many moons ago. UFC, I've heard that the card wasn't good enough, hence why that's been put back. And it's a bit of a shame, really, with UFC 300 coming up and then having the first fight night in Saudi. You're going to find that hard to match 300. It's a bit unlucky how it's piggybacking straight after that event.
It might help keep the momentum after 300. They might get like a real high-end viewership in 300. If they didn't have the Saudi show, they might struggle to get that high for the following show. It would almost automatically be a letdown compared to 300 if they don't do
Yeah.
something different, like have it somewhere totally different. So it might be a good thing
100%.
for it.
It could be. It's 50-50, really. Like I say, I'm not that well versed in MMA. I do love watching the UFC. Boxing's my niche, but I do keep an eye on the MMA and the UFC because there's some great fights on there. Let's not forget it. And the UFC have got the perfect formula. If the Saudis come in and do this and bring it all under one banner, we're going to see the best fighting the best, and boxing's going to get that. That's what boxing lacks. Everybody wants to keep the zero. Everybody wants to keep the undefeated record. Everybody wants to look great in this fight. The best have got to fight the best. You need to start marketing where the casuals become regulars.
Eddie Hearn talks a lot about wanting to do that. He's still got a while left of a promoter if he keeps doing it till Frank Warren, Bob Arum's age, although he talks about that he doesn't want to do that. I think he still might, especially if he's got this dream of making a kind of UFC, but of matchroom boxers, how he would ever get that kind of monopoly. The only way I can see is if he works hand in hand with the Saudis and sort of is a big hand in helping that scene grow, maybe he'll have a lot more say in what goes on and is able to put something together like that. If anyone can do it, I think it's going to be him. I don't see any other rising figurehead. I don't think Ben Shalom's going to do it. I think Warren's good, but he's too old, so
Yeah.
he's not going to do it. Who else is there?
When you've got all these weight classes and you've got these belts occupied and nobody's willing to take the jump up, because isn't that what boxing and combat sports is for? To see who's the best? You want to test yourself? It doesn't seem that we're getting that in boxing at the moment. There's always something in between. The five versus five for Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn, that's a good start as well. The Dave Rettman probably was opening the can of worms for what is to come. The Beterbiev and Bivol is going to be the headliner for that five versus five. I'm excited personally. Boxing needs this injection. Boxing has been losing to MMA. It's even been losing to the Misfits. I have been to these stadiums and they haven't even been a half full. What you're struggling to get is ticket buyers or just buying that particular fighter. Once that fighter has fought, they're going home. So we need to find a way where they're going to be stuck in that stadium. When you've got MMA doing these crazy shows, you're going to lose out unless we start pitting the best against the best in boxing.
Yeah, totally agree. Making the cards exciting start to finish, but also not taking everything to Saudi where it gets to the point that your small hall shows here, no one cares about because everything's going on over in Saudi. And it's like these small hall fighters, they can't afford to be getting flights out to Saudi Arabia, having whole training camps there. They've got to stay here until they build their profile and get to that level. So I hope they don't get neglected. I hope there's still effort going into building stuff here as well so that we get fighters that can then transition and go where they want, where the money is. How far do you think Francis Ngannou can go in boxing? He's an interesting one.
Everybody said Fury was going to cakewalk that fight. I said it'll be one of the hardest fights of his life, purely and simple because it's unorthodox how Ngannou boxes. People might say, no, he looked like a proper boxer, but it is unorthodox. If you look at how Tyson was training Ngannou, that left hook was brilliant. He come over the right hand. Tyson Fury got greedy. He hit him with a perfect 1-2, and then he went in for the other 1-2 and got clipped on the second shot. Coming over that right hand with that left hook, it was perfect. It was brilliant. I believe he will box Joshua differently, and I believe Joshua will box a lot differently too. Tyson Fury had the most off night that he could possibly have. Ngannou had the best night that he could possibly have. That's how I think it fell on the night. We've got a little bit more footage of Ngannou boxing now, so that is something what we can go off. Couldn't go off nothing when the Fury fight was happening. We could go off the unorthodox uppercuts that he was catching as that overeem with. That wasn't very technical in boxing wise. So when you look at that coming over for the first time, I believe you can't overlook that fighter. And I believe that's what happened on that night. But this Joshua fight will be so different to that Fury fight. Joshua will box early and he'll look to tire Ngannou. This is crazy as well because I don't believe Joshua's output has been great over the last few fights. Ngannou, I think it was a little bit of a ridicule putting him in the top 10 of the WBC rankings. I wasn't a fan of that. I think we'll find out who Ngannou is in this Joshua fight. I really do.
I think Joshua beats him. I still think he gives a good fight to the likes of Derek Chisora, a Joe Joyce, maybe even a Joe Parker. Tyson Fury, when he landed that 1-2 you talked about, and he went in for another 1-2, it's because most opponents he lands that on start falling backwards almost because he's such a big guy. Ngannou took the 1-2. He was just still standing there. So Fury goes in again thinking he's going to get another one. And he's just still there and he hits him back. It's not even fazed him. I think the durability of not only Ngannou, but MMA fighters is pretty underrated. But him, just with his size and attributes, he's going to cause a lot of people a problem. I think if he'd been a boxer for longer, him being in the top 10 wouldn't be a massive disrespect to the other boxers in the top 10. I think he does handle a lot of them.
I believe that as well. If you go outside the top three today, Daniel Dubois, you can say that he has improved with that Miller fight, but Miller was coming off 3.5 year layoff. See, Jared Anderson hasn't even been involved in this. Jared Anderson is a great up-and-coming heavyweight from America. He hasn't even been spoke of. I believe you could put him in with Ngannou, and he boxes Ngannou's head clean off right now. I really do, because Jared Anderson is super skilled. Once he learns how to use that Philly shell correctly, he is going to be the difficult man to beat.
You're a big fan of like the bare knuckle side of boxing. What's it like being at like a bare knuckle event, and how does the atmosphere compare to a traditional boxing event? And do you think bare knuckle can ever reach the heights that boxing or the UFC has?
How bare knuckle has evolved is insane. I was there from the beginning. I was a coach from back in the B-Bad days. A lot of people will know what I'm talking about. I got sponsored by Spartan Bare Knuckle Fight Club when I first did the podcast. I interviewed the owner. So it evolved from that. That's in the 8x8 hay bale. Now, that is nowhere to move. When you hear those punches connect from pit side, I like ring boxing. I like the octagon boxing, but there's nothing like pit fighting in the bales. The atmosphere is unreal, but the energy and the electricity coming from the fighters, yeah, it looks wild, it looks scruffy, it looks out of shape and form, but you're going to meet some of the toughest men that you possibly know in those bare knuckle organizations. I used to promote a regional division for Spartan. It was the Northeast division. During the pandemic, I'm not proud of it, but it was an experience.
Is that Pandemic Promotions? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it was going to be a fantastic day until 20 odd armed police vans and officers came, and we said it was a family feud with travellers. We're going to give her 2 hours. But this lad come out of nowhere, out of the bushes, and started spitting at the police officer. They were like, "Right, Matt, you've got to go." I'm not proud of it, but it was an experience. I helped put a show on in Oldham as well. I love the bare knuckle. Spartans Bare Knuckle Fight Club, for me, they're exciting. They've got a show coming up in March. Andrew Anthony against Nate J-Dog. That is for the bare knuckle governor title. You're talking about two extremely hard men, really hard men, and it's going to be a brilliant fight. I believe there's going to be some big news involving the BKFC very soon. Dave Feldman, the owner of it, has been with Dana. There's whispers of the BKFC being bought by the UFC.
You hear more about it these days. Like back in the day, it was like the one you don't speak about kind of thing. But now
Oh,
it's more prevalent.
it really is taking off, mate. Like in Poland, Top Dog, some of them fighters are unbelievable. Spartan on that same show on the March the 9th have got a Mexican flying over. He's fighting Nathan Dixon for the featherweight world title. He's called Gilberto Aguilar. If he comes over and beats Nathan, he's a three-time world champion. He's beat Darnell John, who was the super middleweight champion. He come over and beat him at his weight. He flew back over to Mexico, came back and fought Robbie Adamson for his lightweight title. Beat Robbie. Those two are two of the best fighters that Spartan have. Now, if he comes here and beats Nathan this time, he's got to be number one. He has to be, because Nathan hasn't lost a fight in the pit. It's really intriguing.
It seems like there's a bit of a myth that boxing with gloves is somehow safer than MMA or bare knuckle boxing, but surely getting hit by blunt force 100 times in the head over 12 rounds, surely that's worse for you than getting caught out with a couple of clean punches or a submission in a bare knuckle or a mixed martial arts type event.
Yeah, it might look bad, but they have healing powers like nothing else. My friend Danny Christie, who's a BKFC light heavyweight champion, he can be in a scrap and he'll be fine within a week. I've never seen nothing like it before in my life. He heals super quick.
Do you think that's something you can train, healing factor, like the karate master who karate chops a pile of bricks every day and his hand gets harder?
If you are super fit, your healing abilities and your recovery abilities is going to be 100%. Eat healthily, your diet, clean lifestyle aids good healing and recovery abilities.
People come to me and they say, I got injured, I got a bad back from the other day. They use these things as excuses as to why they can't train. But long term, the more you train and condition your body to learn to repair itself, you're feeding your body right, you're getting your circulation going, so the nutrition's getting to your muscles, to your bones, you become less prone to injury because you've got more structure in your body. The muscles supporting your joints are there because you've developed them, you've worked hard on it. You just become less likely to have a bad back, to get injured in the first place.
You condition your body. This is what you do the training for. Stretch off properly, cool down properly, eating, sleeping. It all clicks together. It's imperative that your body gets to heal ready for that next session.
Yeah, people overlook the recovery part, but really it's the recovery where your muscles grow, where everything heals up. When you're training, all you're doing is breaking down your muscle and your tissue. And if you don't give yourself time to sleep, give yourself the nutrition you need, you're not going to get any stronger because you're not giving your body what it needs. What kind of training are you doing at the moment then?
I've got a couple of classes going at a community center at the minute. We're just doing some box exercise. I want to get them of a certain level of fitness before they start actually doing the boxing side. I like to do my sit-ups and press-ups in the house. As long as I'm strong enough to hold the pads for whoever to hold the pads for, I've always done my conditioning myself. I've always had the mentality when I go home, my brain will not allow me to be in the house and not do my workout. I've got to do that workout. I have to.
I do a little bit of pad work sometimes with clients, and it surprised me how much effort it takes you holding the pads because you kind of got to do the same movements and they're doing to match them. You're not just standing there with it. You've got to kind of match their energy as well. It's pretty
Oh,
tough.
100%. Got to be sharp. Your fast fiber twitch muscles, all them have got to be very active. And when you're doing the pads, this is why I attribute me still looking up here technically, is because I hold the pads and I'm constantly telling people, look, yeah, shape up, don't stick elbows out this way, that way. Do you know what I mean? Nice straight punches, come over with the hooks. It all rolls into one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. What's a lesson that you've learned that you'd like to share maybe with our listeners? Something like a life lesson, something deep you've learned from practicing martial arts or from following fighters and martial artists?
Never, ever, ever take things for granted. Be grateful for things. Cherish the moments that you're in today and don't worry about tomorrow because if you're not living for today, there is no tomorrow. This might sound cheesy and corny, but you've got to live your life day by day. Cherish the day and live for today.
Well, what a message. I think that's a perfect point to end on. Lee, thanks so much for joining me today on Vantage Point.
Thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.